But you can say, oh, there was this great interview with J-Bot, whatever.
I will use it if we get audited.
No problem. No, because we can mention your games. You have the virtual families, virtual villagers, virtual
everything.
What's next?
Virtual something.
Yeah. What do you work on now?
We have Virtual Villagers 4 coming out in about a month or two. Been working on it since the summer.
Is it still on an island?
Same island. We're really milking this island.
It's kind of milking it.
Is it a different village or is it the same village?
No, it's always a migration of, like, you overpopulate and then people migrate and start a new colony.
So basically, it's turning into an entire country.
It is. It's becoming quite overpopulated, fully developed. No, it's this one's called the Tree of Life. It's funny because we had a bad year last year, 2008. I had medical problems, and my wife had medical problems, and we were just depressed.
I was going to ask you about that. How do you have insurance being an independent developer?
You know, health insurance, whatever. You know, I pay for Kaiser. I've you know, HMO, health insurance. It was a bad year, and we made Virtual Families last year in 2008. It took us 11 months, which is longer than we usually spend. And in the end, I look at the game and it's really heavy. It's depressing. There's a lot of illness and depression in the game.
It reflected your
own
life.
It does.
Life,
it's
right?
Really, it's crazy. And now we've been really happy this year. Everything's gone our way. Just, you know,
really?
Turn of the tide, and the baby came, and that went really smoothly, and parts of work have turned around, other parts have gone downhill. But we've just been more positive in the games that called the Tree of Life, and I feel like it has more positivity in it. It's all about nurturing a dying tree back to life and new growth, and it's funny how the game seeps into your design. I mean, your life seeps into your design.
Right. So you're actually having a good year. Has the economy, the bad economy, has it really affected sales at all?
It did eventually, not right away. When it really hit and the meltdown started last October 2008, we thought, oh, we're invincible. People will just stay home. They're still going to buy games. And then come spring, we started to see declines, real declines in our revenue. There was another issue that happened in casual games. There was a movement towards price compression that happened quite suddenly, where the prices were $19.95 for so long, and then there were ways to get them cheaper in clubs and discount programs, and then suddenly everyone just dropped the price to $7.
Because they thought because of the economy there would be a cheaper price?
That helped. That greased the wheels.
But
it was beyond that. It was also just, there was this kind of, people were holding themselves back, and this competition was happening with these kind of ways to get the games cheaper and wink, wink. And then suddenly everyone's like, fuck it. We're going $7. We're going to undersell everyone. And people start trying to do market share grabs from each other.
Once you start doing that, though, then everyone has to drop the price and everybody
exactly.
loses.
So everyone does this to grab market share. Then they end up putting it all back. And everyone has the same market share they started with, but they have less revenue. That's me. Thank you. Oh, no, that's you. Oh, it's good. So we have this new baby.
Congratulations.
Thanks. We don't know what we're doing. Everything
nobody
is traumatic.
Nobody knows what they're
That's
doing.
That's right. But you don't really understand until you're in it how much you don't know what you're doing. And you see people strolling down the street. And the first time you take your baby out in the stroller, it's nerve-wracking. You're afraid he's going to lose it. You won't be able to control him. It'll be embarrassing. He'll get cold. The stroller, you don't know how to work it. Everything's hard.
It might fall out of the stroller.
Everything seems hard. So what if he craps himself and I'm far from home? I have to change him in the car. I'm not good at it. It's hard for us to change him. We're not good at it yet. So everything's hard. So we basically haven't gone out for 6 weeks. And so food like this is a treat for me because my wife's Italian. We only eat Italian food at home.
That's the wonderful. Terrible? I don't know how to respond.
It's great. But eventually,
I love Italian food in two or three fork or spoonfuls. After that, I can't eat it.
Try twice a day for every day.
Can't do it. And it's weird because it's mostly pasta, but it fills me up immediately. I don't know why. As opposed to you know, Japanese is mostly noodles, which is the same thing, but I can eat that 10 times a day and
I
never
go
get
out of. So you're out of hungry, man. How was that? Looking back, sum it up in a sentence.
It was an experience. That's a sentence. Done. I spent the majority of what could have been my career building years in a country which has no opportunities for career.
Not really true though, because we hire people sometimes, and when we hire, we don't even know if some of our people have a degree. We don't care.
Right.
We care what name, what shippable products their name is on. And in that way, you're in pretty good shape.
Oh, I've got a crap load of products produced. So
that's what people care about, that you were involved in products that went out the door.
Yeah.
Multiple ones. That's all we'd need to know to hire you. So do you think you'll end up with a video game company in Tokyo?
That's my plan. If I have to get fluent enough to actually take a job interview, if I went that route. If our bill works out, if it sells more than two copies, then I could end up doing that. I'd just have to get some sort of visa and live there.
I did that in Paris when I was courting my wife. I was there, and I started my company with the Palm games, the casino games.
Right.
Keeping my burn rate down, being tight with my money, and living off, you know, 100 sales a month of those casino games.
What were they priced at, though?
$10.
So I got to raise my price.
Well, I was bringing
or sell
in, like,
200.
Well, yeah, you got to sell more. That's the key. That's the answer. Not you got to sell more. PDA mills have a brand that people know.
Yeah.
People with an iPhone look for those games. The average developer doesn't have that. I know people who do great in casual, went to iPhone, and they sell like one a month.
Yeah. Well, the BDM also jumped in like right when the market took off.
Remember.
So they got lucky. Yeah, I know. You remember Snails?
Of course.
The artist.
I was trying to remember the song. It was so catchy. It was maddening.
Yeah. That's the best song I've ever written. Done.
Retired.
Done. Well, that and the music for, you know, Village Sin. And
great music.
And Fish Tycoon. I still have to bill you for that.
Anytime, man. While the dollar still worth something. The shopping music in Fish Tycoon was hilarious.
The elevator music?
Yeah, it's so funny. You nailed that in one try.
Yeah, you're featured in Kama Sutra a lot.
Sometimes, yeah. That's as good as it gets. We did some really good... Actually, we were featured in Kama Sutra because I was speaking at a conference in Seattle. And they covered my talk very well. Fairly recently.
Yeah, I missed that conference, sorry.
I was talking about that people should spend more on their game development because everyone is spending less as a reaction to the lower price points.
Right.
And it's just causing this downward spiral, this deflation of quality. And I was saying, look, if you spend more, it's riskier, but your game can stand out and actually make a lot more with peripheral works.
Quality.
By licensing the IP to other platforms.
Yeah, quality always stands out over time.
Yeah, but if you make a game for $100, your ROI is going to be very high if you sell some.
For how long?
Well, that's true, and tail is a big factor with higher quality. We think our games have a much longer tail than the average hidden object game.
I don't think casual games exist.
That's a...
I always confuse... I used to confuse them because
there was... thesis.
I used to confuse independent games with casual games because at one time it was damn near the same thing. Because casual games became popular and therefore independent games became popular.
I spoke at the indie conference too, at GDC 2 years ago. It was a very interesting talk. Because at that conference, one day I spoke at the casual conference, kind of a sub-conference at GDC. And then I spoke at the indie developers. in a casual, I was telling people, you gotta be more creative, your games suck. Everyone's doing hidden object games. You know, look at the indies, they're making brilliant games. Then the next day at the indie talk, I was like, you guys need to make some money. This is ridiculous.
No,
your games are kicking
ass,
and you don't know how to market them or sell them.
Right.
So I was evangelizing the casual distribution to the indie games. And I was evangelizing indie development to the casual distributors.
That's the exact problem. I'm
trying to put them together.
I wrote an article similar to that. But a lot of it is the distribution problem. If you're making independent games, who are you going to distribute them to? If you're making casual games, you're stuck with what the distributors tell you what to develop. Like, one of the biggest ones is Big Fish Games. And if you submit any games, like, oh, submit any ideas, we're very open. If you submit any ideas to them, I got a few developer friends got the same form email. We only accept, you know, our target audience is between 30 and something, mostly female. And they only want to play these games, so make one of these games. Like, well, that's not very... I guess that's your casual market then, so that's what you have to develop. If you're an independent game developer, you're pretty much on your own.
We basically created the sim category in casual.
Yeah.
And we did it with Fish Tycoon, originally, and then with Virtual Villagers, which has been flown many times now. We've even sued someone.
Good.
And Fish Tycoon, we first brought it to Big Fish, and they said no. Everyone else said no, too. While we were demoing it, everyone loved it, but when it was time to sign the papers and sell it, they're like, no. We finally went to Big Fish and begged them to sell it. And they sold it as their, like, loser game of the week, you know, their Thursday evening launch. And it kicked everything's ass up and down the street. And they immediately signed us for a multi-year publishing deal.
Really?
And took over publishing of our games. So, you're right, but persistence always pays off. If you can get through.
Sure. No, it makes sense. I think the key is not to make crap because you're forced to make crap.
Yeah, we were ready to. We were going to resign to just sell it at our own site, as you are you doing with Arvel. We're going to do exactly that.
Are you saying I'm crap?
No, I'm saying you're awesome. We were going to do that. And we're like, fuck it. You know, it's about the money, but you know, the game is good, and they don't see it. They're suits. That was our impression. And basically, they said no, and we were literally we had our finger on the mouse, and we were going to push. Launch it on our site.
Right.
And we're like, let's write to them one more time. They're launching garbage twice a week, among other games, whatever. They could sell our game and try it. And that changed our life. But that got our foot in the door, and then we got full distribution over the next 2 years. The beacon of light for indie is Steam.
Is it? I hope.
It is. It probably is.
The thing is that it's still hard to break in. I don't know. To get on Steam, you have to contact someone. There is no list of here's what you do and here's how you apply. It's email.
It's hard
this
to get on Steam. Really hard.
Email this guy.
That's the key, though. The reason that a lot of these portals like Big Fish are having trouble now is that they're selling games that are all the same.
Yeah.
You make a game according to the specs that they want on their form letter, they'll sell it. And people are making them cheaper and cheaper, and Big Fish just sells them. Steam is very selective.
True.
And when they like something, they get behind it, like World of Goo.
World of Goo is a brilliant game.
And it's indie. Two guys.
They don't have it anymore, but I like their original license agreement.
Pay what you want?
It was pay for it, and then don't give it to too many people. Please. Who's that?
That was, actually, that was the audio guy.
You're
that we
cheating
worked
with. On me.
I know. Are you doing audio work?
Yep. For myself. I do great work for myself.
I have no doubt.
Especially now that...
You do great work for me, too.
I do even better work than I did back then, too, because now I have... While I was in Hungary, I saved a lot of money, and I was able to buy a lot of the software and tools. And
are you bringing all that gear to Tokyo?
Yeah, I've got it. I can fit my entire studio in my bag, including the desk.
You going with a laptop?
Yeah, MacBook. And the table tote. I'm a big fan of the table tote.
What's a table tote?
It's a plastic desk phone.
Oh, you're not joking.
I'm not joking.
I assumed you were joking.
No, you open it up, and then inside it's got four telescopic aluminum legs which come out attached to it. Turn it upside down, it holds this much.
That could be useful in Paris. Any city that's compact, like Tokyo or Paris, I imagine.
Yeah. That's why I picked it up.
In Paris, when I go with my wife, we go for a week or two when I have to work. And usually I'm in a hotel. And there's a desk there to work on. And it's about half the size of this desk. So my laptop's going off the edge.
Uh-huh.
You know, my mouse is on my leg.
Right. Another good thing is the Futura Gamers desk. Laptop work. You get the Gamers desk thing, which I put on top of the table. It goes in the middle and has two attachments here. So you get something like this big.
You're like a transformer.
Yeah, exactly. What did I interrupt you? Oh, Amanda Fitch.
Yeah, Amanda. So anyway, she's the model you should be looking at if you want to distribute
your
adventure game.
Yeah. But last I checked, this was maybe 6 months ago. Now she just has, her website is selling a bunch of other people's games. It's like,
she's been doing that for a while.
It's a portal like, you know, Big Fish or any other casual gaming site.
I wouldn't say it's a portal. It's a developer site. It's at amaranthia.com. And it's, she's just trying to monetize her traffic. She's not a portal.
She's in San Francisco?
She's in Seattle. But I see her at least twice a year at the conferences. And she kind of looks up to LDW as, you know, a notch more successful than she is. And I always kind of look up to her as, like, sticking to her guns and keeping her integrity and doing the game she wants to do.
Right.
And she's done, she did a couple casual games, too. She tried to do a time management game.
She did a few things in the Torque engine.
Yeah, she did one called Grim's Hatchery and one called, someone's Drink Factory.
Yeah, so she's
Yummy
actually,
Drink Factory.
So she seems like she's actually a pretty good scripter.
She's never done formal programming, and she's a pretty good programmer now, it seems like. But she also has a boyfriend who works for Microsoft,
so she
has some help.
So I gotta get a boyfriend that works at Microsoft.
You could. You're cute.
Yeah.
But she did crack a distribution, and as we cracked and created a genre for Sims, she cracked and created a genre for these old school, I call them Nuts and Twigs adventures, because they're tile-based and everything is so tiny that it's like little nuts and twigs moving around.
Right, okay.
That's just a term that we use at my company. We call them Nuts and Twigs, but they're these old-school adventures like, you know, the early Final Fantasy, things like that. And she kind of cracked that nut in casual.
Right.
And people do get launches there once in a while. There's another person that, because of her work, was able to launch a game called Cute Night, and more recently, Cute Night Adventures. And anyway, she kind of cracked that nut, you know? She breathed life into casual, too, because every time you bring a new genre in, even if it's marginally successful, you reinvigorate the people.
Sure.
Because if you keep looking at hidden object games every day, eventually you're going to be like, go to Steam.
Right.
You're going to stop going to these sites. I think it's bad for the industry.
Yeah.
So I think it's great for the industry to challenge it. And games like you do might be a good fit.
I do plugger games. I do it mostly by lecturing.
Yeah, that's impressive, man. I think I was asked to speak one time somewhere in L.A., never made it.
The dirty secret is that most people that speak aren't asked to speak. Most people have proposed their speeches. So, I've been asked a couple times, but I've realized that if you wait to be asked, you're not going to be speaking much. And the ones that speak...
I don't feel qualified to talk about anything.
Yeah, you're surprisingly qualified, though. People... You go to these conferences, people are just full of shit. They're clearly not qualified, and they're still talking. Some of them are quite prolific about it, you know?
You have any plans after the Villagers series?
Well, we're going to do another Village game. We have an idea for kind of a different direction to take the game.
You're going to start doing government?
I like simulations, so we're going to stay in that genre. We'll keep making games as long as it pays the bills.
That's a good plan.
In fact, I'll make games even if it stops paying the bills.
That's a good plan.
I'll just pay less people to work with me. That's really how we've designed the business. If times get tough, we're going to get lean, like we did in Palm days.
Right.
I'll tell you a funny story about Palm. They sent me a cease and desist because of a little Palm pet. my virtual pet game. You remember that game?
That was ages ago.
It's a cute game though, right?
Yeah.
They sent me a cease and desist a few years
just
ago.
It was just a Tamagotchi. Thing.
Yeah, it was a Tamagotchi. And it was a Tamagotchi that that moved hardware. People loved it. People liked it. Uh-huh. People listed it. Oh, I like LDW's game, so I buy Palm devices. And after all this, after years of this, their lawyers contact me, cease and desist, you can't use the word Palm in your game's name. And I'm like, why is the lawyer contacting me? Where's this guy and that guy? And I mentioned some of the top people at Palm. I'm like, why aren't these people contacting me? And the lawyer was like, oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't know, you know. We've been hired to protect their trademark. And ultimately, they're like, yeah, you really have to take the name down. So I said, fine, we'll call it Little Pocket Pet. And we sent it to the new build out to all the portals. Pendango, Palm Gear, Palm.com. Well, Palm.com didn't put it up because their bureaucracy prevented it from making it through the queue. And so basically we said, yeah, we give it to everyone. And they said, okay, you're in compliance. And it's still on Palm.com as Little Palm Pet. After they
threatened
to sue
us. Name.
Screwy, right?
Nobody's buying me. Oh, you bought me a coffee.
Yeah, no one's buying me either. People, you know, they talk to us. They put out feelers a couple years ago, but these days no one gives a shit because the prices have gone through the floor and everyone has commoditized the games. Everyone is convinced now that anyone can make them. They're all the same. The value that we brought is no longer as obvious as it used to be. And, you know, we thought about it and we were like, well, we may be able to sell the company, and we decided we don't want to be someone's employee. We'd rather make less money.
Gaming, game design will always win. Good game design.
Yeah, I think that's true.
I think right now, over the next few years, as more game maker, game engine types of thing become more available and the technology is higher, and anybody actually can make a game. Just simple scripting and whatnot.
Yeah, the
90% of those people won't finish the game because that's how game
developers work.
The
last inch is tough.
Yeah. And then most of the games will just be pretty graphic shows and won't. There's no substance to it.
Yeah, that's probably true. And you're seeing the tools have improved. You're seeing really creative, wonderful games like World of Goo, although they have their own tools for that. Another game called Osmos. I love it. Amazing.
Osmos?
Yeah. It's just a
spell
game.
Spell that.
O-S-M-O-S.
Like osmosis.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. Because it's a game where you're a ball, and you suck up other balls, smaller balls, and you get bigger, and it has lots of physics. There's gravity, and as you get bigger, you have gravity.
2D?
And, 2D,
so it's
beautiful.
Like, so it's like Katamari,
amazing.
Damashi, but 2D.
Yeah, yeah.
It's, and physics, more physics
yes,
based.
All those
cool.
things. It's really cool. It's on Steam. It's like $5-$10, and the music's all ambient. Beautiful ambient music.
You like that?
Love ambient music, and it's got, you know, the music actually has track names at the bottom.
And that's cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. They give the music the import that it deserves.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, there was like the last game that did that was probably Ridge Racer.
Not many games do that. Yeah, Ridge Racer does that, right?
Yeah.
They're like, but with like metal and stuff.
Yeah.